the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site by the USA Today NFL Wire. And it is episode 361. It is installment number 3 of our 6-part opponent previews set for the 2022 opponents for the Cardinals this season. And it is part 2 of our AFC West preview of our opponents. In our last edition of the show, we focused on the Kansas City Chiefs and the Las Vegas Raiders. It hasn't been the LA Raiders in such a long time. But the Las Vegas Raiders, as those are the first two AFC opponents the Cardinals face in the 2022 season and the first two opponents of this season. I spoke with Charles Goldman from ChiefsWire.com and with Marcus Mosher from RaidersWire.com. And so in this edition of the show, we will focus on the opponents of the LA Chargers, whom the Cardinals will play on Thanksgiving weekend at home, and then with the Denver Broncos, whom the Cardinals will face on the road in December. So we'll start off with the Chargers and then follow that up with the Broncos. That's coming up right now. Next up in our opponent previews, we have the Los Angeles Chargers, whom the Arizona Cardinals will host in week 12, the week before their bye. And to help us get to know the Chargers a little better, a team that we see often in the preseason, but rarely in the regular season, we've got Gavino Borges, the managing editor for ChargersWire.com, our NFL wire site covering the Chargers. Gavino, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. A guy, actually, listeners, he lives here. He lives here in Arizona, too. It's a rare thing to happen, but we've got another fellow Arizonian, Zoni, whatever you want to call yourselves. But he covers the Chargers. Gavino, thanks for coming on. As almost always happens, like the pod before the pod, it's always, I almost wish that I'd start recording before things and then have some outtakes to add. But we're getting the serious stuff, but it's always getting good stuff talking before the show actually starts.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on. Again, I'm looking forward to this year playing the Cardinals. It will be here in Arizona, so that's pretty exciting. I'll be able to attend that game without having to travel to California. So that's a win in itself.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, gas prices these days is unpleasant. But Cardinals and Chargers, they only play each other once every 4 years. Now, the Chargers, I believe, I did the Cardinals record against them. I think the Chargers have pretty much dominated the season, the historical series against the Chargers, and the Chargers completely obliterated the Cardinals. So, oh yeah, the Chargers are 10-4 against the Cardinals. The last time was, I think it was like 45-14 in 2018 in that very forgettable year for the Cardinals. And then before that, the last time before that was 2014, a week one Monday Night Football game that came down to the wire. The Cardinals won that one 18-17. Carson Palmer hurt his shoulder that game in that fateful 2014 year, which, Cardinals fans, it's one of the greatest what-ifs, because that was a team that was built for a championship. Carson Palmer tears his ACL, Drew Stanton injures his knee, and we get Ryan Lindley in the playoffs, one of the biggest what-ifs in Cardinals history. But anyway, thanks for coming to the show, Gavino. We don't need to rehash that. But what we want to talk about is the Cardinals and Chargers face each other this season. Let's look back over last year. The Chargers finished 9-8, third place in the AFC West. If you look back over last season, did that exceed or fall short of expectations, and what was the good and the bad that happened last year? Obviously, they didn't quite make the playoffs. They did have a winning record, but they didn't make it to the postseason.
I think it met expectations. So that was the first year under Brandon Staley as the head coach. And I think when you look at the roster, this is a team that, again, they're an on-paper type of team. They have all this talent on both sides of the ball, but it came down to injuries for them. In-game luck, they wouldn't be on their side. And, you know, with this team, it was injuries that hurt them quite a bit. And it was their star player, Justin Herbert, who kept them in all these games. So I think it's another tale that you would reflect on this season. If the Chargers were healthy, they could have had a better record. But like when you have a quarterback like Justin Herbert, who's capable of doing what he does by keeping them in these games, by leading them to 9 wins over the course of the season, like that's pretty impressive overall. And I feel like it was just a very like small glimpse of what's to come, especially with what they did this past offseason.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the change to Brandon Staley. Had the 1 year as defensive coordinator for the Rams, and it feels like anything Sean McVay touches, everyone wants a piece of that. What were the early returns from Staley as a head coach after moving on from Anthony Lynn?
So I would say the biggest change was going from an offensive-minded guy to a defensive-minded guy, because Anthony Lynn was a former running back. He was a running back's coach, offensive coordinator for the Bills. So coming in, he was an offensive-minded guy. And then with Brandon Staley, he's one of the youngest coaches in the league. And, you know, you looked at what he did with the Rams, guiding them to the best defense in the league. And I think in today's NFL, you see these coaches, they're getting younger and younger. But again, they have bright minds. And with Brandon Staley, again, if you hear him talk, he seems like he's been in this league for well over a decade, well-spoken guy. And in just his first season, he kind of shifted the culture of this team. And I think that's ultimately another reason why they had the success that they did despite all the injuries as well. Because even though he's still in his 30s, it's just how he kind of he saw this team. He recognized like what he wanted to become. And while he didn't have the personnel, he made do with what he had. And then with this offseason, he went out and got the pieces that he needed to help this team succeed.
The big thing so far about the Chargers has been the development of Justin Herbert and the impact that he's had early on. I will admit, as we were talking before the show, I didn't think Herbert would be this good. I watch a lot of Pac-12 football. I've got season tickets to Arizona State, so I've seen all these Pac-12 quarterbacks, and while I knew Herbert was talented, I thought he was going to be something similar to Blaine Gabbert. Blaine Gabbert was an abject disaster as a starter with Jacksonville, but it's turned out to have a pretty decent NFL career in terms of longevity. But in terms of what he would achieve, I thought he was probably on the Blaine Gabbert trajectory. And ever since he came in, he has been incredible. How much better do you think he can be?
See, in only 2 years, he's already being viewed as a top five quarterback. And going back to what you're talking about, that's someone that I'll you know, be able to stand on this Justin Herbert hill, because coming out of Oregon, I thought he would be a great quarterback. And I even wrote a piece that, you know, why he would be the guy to succeed Phillip Rivers. And, you know, they drafted him. Year one was unexpected coming in. Against the Chiefs after a punctured lung to Tyrod Taylor. And then since then, you know, it's been history. He's every week, it seems like he's making these dazzling throws under pressure, just, you know, on the run, you know, what he can do with his legs. And it seems like this past season, you'd see like a highlight throw from him. And it's just like, you'd think that was you know, his best throw that anyone could make, but you know, the following week would come and he'd deliver with something else. And going into year three, year two under Joe Lombardi, I think now that he has a grasp of this system, I think of what's around him, with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams coming back, who was an integral piece of this offseason, second year Josh Palmer. And with the improvements that they made to the offensive line, you know, drafting Rashawn Slater, who's, you know, already proved himself as one of the best left tackles in this league, going out into the first round and drafting Zion Johnson And then with Corey Linsley and Matt Filer already in place, you have like the pieces around him. And this is a smart guy. So I think that's why he's had so much success, because in college he had three offensive coordinators in a 4-year span. And then he went from Shane Steichen in his rookie season to Joe Lombardi last year. And then he returns him this season. You have an intelligent guy who's able to grasp things very quickly. And that's a big part of this position, being able to read the field, diagnosing coverages and schemes. And we saw that early on. And I think now that he has this general idea of what Joe Lombardi, brought to the Chargers, like he completely put the offense like around Justin Herbert. So it wasn't like around like the players. It was solely around Justin Herbert to play to his strengths. And I think we saw that last year by allowing him to throw more vertical, being able to use that big arm of his. And year three, I think, is going to be very exciting. And again, I think we see him as a top five quarterback now. And I think he can definitely sneak into that top three, depending on what he does this year.
Do you think what are the weaknesses he still has in his game, if any?
So some of the weaknesses that he has might be like what we saw in college. So I feel like when his processor is sped up, he will make some throws that, you know, you kind of question why did he throw that, but it's something that he's gotten a lot better of. And again, this is a guy that in a 2-year span doesn't have a lot of holes to his game because he has the physical traits, but he has the athleticism to pair with that. So, he's not the scrambling type of quarterback, but he has the athleticism too. So when he will get off, like he can pick up a few yards and he has the speed to it as well. So, you know, but I would say like one of his holes would be still like the mental processing thing. But at the same time, like going from college to the NFL, it's not an easy transition at all with the game getting a lot faster. And it's something that he picked up on. But at the same time, like the past few years, that's something that I still saw that he could work on. And then really just trying to utilize his arm talent and really make these throws, like heroic throws still. But again, we didn't see too many of them. So I would say like those two things are his quote unquote weaknesses to his game. But this is a really, really good player that we're talking about here.
Let's look ahead to what they've done this offseason. So coming up next on the Rise Up See Red podcast, Best Arrow Cardinals Talk on the web. We'll come back and kind of recap who did they lose, who did they add, a very busy free agent period for them, and what did they add in the draft. That's coming up next on Rise Up See Red. We're back on the Rise Up See Red podcast, Best Arrow Cardinals Talk on the web. We've got Gavino Borges from ChargersWire.com, who runs that site for the USA Today NFL Wire. We talked about what happened over the last season, Justin Herbert, Brandon Staley. Let's talk about this offseason. They loaded up on defense, but did they lose anyone of in particular impact? So who did they lose, let go, trade that will impact things? And then in free agency, with excluding the draft, who did they add that are via trade or free agency that should be impactful? Obviously, we've got a couple of big names that they added on defense.
So Mike Williams was the top free agent for the Chargers, and they ended up extending him right off the bat. They viewed him as a key piece to the offense. I know he was the guy that was being thrown around as a guy that you weren't too sure of him coming back because, again, just this big body receiver, not necessarily going to be winning with speed. And this was a team that really lacked speed. So they're wondering if they can kind of replace him. But I think in the week 18 matchup against the Raiders, when it came down to the wire, he really proved himself to be a key piece, and he kind of made his money in that game. So he was a free agent, and they ended up re-signing him.
Do you see him as a $20 million a year player in terms of receivers? Obviously, the market changed once Christian Kirk got $17 million per year from Jacksonville. I don't know how he did that, but do you see him, based on where the market is set, is $20 million a year for Mike Williams adequate? Or is it too much?
I think so. I think it's perfect because I don't think he was going to settle for anything less, in my opinion. So especially with this wide receiver market, it's really expanding. It's growing. You're seeing these top receivers getting paid, and you know Christian Kirk being a good example right there too. So I feel like $20 million was right up the alley for Mike Williams. Like we had said that the year before, not necessarily, but I think in this new role in Joe Lombardi's offense, he really took his game to another level. And I think that's why he got the money that he got, because he was able to prove himself as someone other as just like as a vertical threat, you know, 50-50 jump ball specialist, because Mike Williams is being used as the X receiver, which is the same role as played by Michael Thomas when he was there with the Saints. So he was given that role and he shined in it. So I think $20 million was about right for Mike Williams.
Okay. Any other players who departed that will impact?
Yeah. So on the starting defense for the Chargers, they lost Jenner Nwosu, who went from the Chargers to the Seahawks, Justin Jones, who's with the Bears, and Kaiser White, who's with the Eagles. So those are like the most notable names right there. But again, with them leaving the Chargers, the team made the point to really revamp the defensive side of the ball so they're not being viewed as huge losses, because when you look at who they acquired, they kind of made up that difference right there with their acquisitions.
The first being the big trade for
big
Khalil
trade.
Mack, pairing Joey Bosa with Khalil Mack, which is going to be scary stuff for the AFC and honestly for the Cardinals when they come to town in week 12. That said, were you surprised by the trade, and how impactful do you think Mack will be pairing him with Bosa?
So, I was a little surprised, and every time that the Chargers have a big move, I ended up always being at the gym. I'm about to start. So I never have my computer on me when I go to the gym, and it always happens to be when I'm at the gym, the Chargers make a big move. So I look at my phone, I'm able to see kind of the brief message on my phone. It said the Chicago Bears trade Khalil Mack to the Los Angeles. I'm like, it's probably gonna be the Rams, because it seems like the Rams are all making moves, and then it's Chargers. So I'm kind of just like, dang it. And I'm just like at the same time driving home, like, wow, the Chargers really got Khalil Mack. Like, wow, this is a glimpse of a big offseason for Brandon Staley. So I was in shock, but just kind of thinking of it, like Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack off the edge. Like, this is going to be very fun. And, you know, Jenner Nwosu played opposite of Bosa. He did fine. You know, he was obviously able to get a good contract with Seattle, but the Chargers wanted to bring in someone who was a superstar pass rusher who's familiar with Brandon Staley's defense. And they went out and traded for him for just a second round pick. Like that was it. So again, getting a second rounder or giving up a second rounder for Khalil Mack, that was huge. I know that he's getting up there in age. He's in his 30s, but again, he's Khalil Mack and he's still wreaking havoc when he's on the field. So that came as a surprise at the time, but just soaking it in, it's exciting to see Khalil Mack in a Charger uniform.
And we know that the kind of the premium positions of defense are on the edge at the pass rush, and then on the boundary, the cornerback. And the Chargers also made the big move to sign J.C. Jackson, the stud corner out of New England. What does he add to the secondary?
Yeah, so that was a huge addition to the secondary. When Staley was with the Rams, he had Jalen Ramsey. Last year, Michael Davis was the team's number one cornerback, who was re-signed the year before. And again, he played that number one role. He was pretty inconsistent. So with the secondary play being vital in Staley's defense, his goal was to revamp the secondary. And with J.C. Jackson, again, he was a top corner on the market. And he didn't shy away from going and grabbing him. So you have a guy who's top in interceptions, I think 25.
That's ridiculous.
Since 2008 or 2018. I think that's when he entered the NFL. And for him to be up there, he wanted a guy who's long, who can play teams number ones, who can get his hands on the ball. And with J.C. Jackson, you add that to the secondary with Derwin James, and you're already thriving right there. And then second year, Asante Samuel Jr., like, you have a really solid core in the back end of the defense right there.
Anybody else of note that they added in free agency on either side of the ball that will make a difference this year?
Yeah, so the biggest issue with the Chargers last year was stopping the run. And early on in free agency, they brought in Sadosub Day, who you're familiar with, having played the Rams. And they went out and signed him. And they also signed nose tackle Austin Johnson, who played with the Giants. So, again, with stopping the run being a huge issue, and that's one of the reasons why they weren't able to make the playoffs this last year. Staley didn't have his personnel. He went out to free agency and got it. And then along with that, just recently he signed Morgan Fox, who I'm sure you're also familiar with, having played with the Rams in Staley's big year in 2020. So he brought him in. Noy, another one that was recently picked up. Troy Reader, linebacker from the Rams. So you see a lot of guys.
They got a bunch of Staley's guys. He totally loaded up on Staley's guys.
They got a bunch of Staley's guys. And one of the big things for Staley was bringing in players with a championship pedigree. So five of those have held up a Lombardi trophy. So Kyle Van Noy, JC Jackson, Sebastian Joseph Day, Troy Reader, and Morgan Fox. So they have experience. I'm sorry, not Morgan Fox. He wasn't on the Rams last year. I was thinking of Chase Daniel. So while he was brought in last year, like, his key thing was bringing in these players who, again, with championship pedigrees, and having that in the locker room is a big deal for him. So the Chargers had a really big offseason in the free agency front, and I think it's going to pay dividends for sure, and especially on the defensive side of the ball.
We look ahead. We look at the draft. Obviously, Zion Johnson comes in. He's a guy that I really liked. I felt that the Cardinals they couldn't have gone wrong by taking Zion with the 21st pick, and they ended up trading that away. So they had Zion Johnson. I also like what they did getting in round four Isaiah Spiller. But outside of those two names, are there any picks that you see making an impact now, and how many of those do you see them being impactful later?
Yeah, so I think our second round pick, Khalil Mack, is going to make an impact.
That's a line Steve Keim has used a couple of times, because we got Chandler Jones for a second, we got DeAndre Hopkins for a second, and then last year we got Rodney Hudson for a third. He's like, I love our second round pick. He's great.
So that's one that we could use there. But round three, the Chargers took JT Woods, and he is a safety out of Baylor, a really good free safety prospect coming in. And we also have Nasir Adderley, who plays that position. But Brandon Staley wants to move him around, having a corner background. He wants to put him close to the line of scrimmage, be able to line up in the slot. So with that, it'll allow JT Woods to play that free safety spot. But also with him playing more of a too high look, JT Woods and Nasir Adderley will be able to play back there, and having two guys that have the range, the athleticism, and the ball skills, that's going to allow Derwin James to do his magic in the box and be able to play a variety of roles. So I think JT Woods is going to be a contributor in year one. And then with our fifth round pick, we took Otito Ogbonia, who is a defense tackle out of UCLA. And again, like I mentioned earlier, stopping the run is going to be key for the Chargers. So after getting Joseph Day and Johnson, Ogbonia, I think, is going to play a big role in that department early on. And then beyond that, they got Jamari Salyer, who was a steal, being viewed as a third rounder. They got him in the sixth round. So he's an offensive line depth. And then getting more secondary depth after injuries hit that area last season. They draft Jasir Taylor, corner out of Wake Forest, and Dean Leonard, a defensive back out of Ole Miss. So again, Staley made the point to upgrade the secondary to get a bona fide starter, you know, in Zion Johnson, to get a run stopping specialist. And again, like you mentioned, Isaiah Spiller, the team has needed to find that complement to Austin Ekeler. They haven't had that since Melvin Gordon. Justin Jackson was their best option. He wasn't able to stay healthy. 2 years ago, they drafted Joshua Kelly. He has not proved his worth. And then last year, they drafted Larry Roundtree. And then when he was on the field, same thing. He didn't produce much. So with Isaiah Spiller, I think that's great value in the fourth round. I think going into training camp and the regular season, they view Spiller as that guy who they believe can be the number two back on this roster. So I think he has a skill set to do so. But overall, I think the Chargers had a vision going into the draft, and they were successful with their picks.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, Best Eric Carlson's Talk on the Web. Let's come back and talk about the outlook and expectations for the 2022 season. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, Best Eric Carlson's Talk on the Web. The Chargers, they made big additions. They're kind of going, it feels like that they're loading up, kind of like how we saw the Cardinals try to do that. While they've got Justin Herbert's rookie deal, they've still got this year before, after this offseason, where he gets to pull the talk about the contract extension, kind of what the Cardinals are going through with Kyler Murray right now. But looking ahead to this season in a loaded AFC West, what is the hope, and what is the hope? Okay, what kind of the ceiling you see? What are reasonable expectations, and what do you see the potential floor is if things go not as planned?
Yeah, so I would say the ceiling, honestly, is making a Super Bowl appearance. I know this is a team that a lot of analysts has pegged throughout the years as Super Bowl hopefuls, but I think when you look at the roster and then most importantly, the quarterback that they have, you have to, you know, view this team as a Super Bowl contender, because like there's not many holes. Like I feel like all starting spots are filled, the depth behind them. It's enough where if one man goes out, they can step in and play a role in their, you know, in their place. But I think that this is a Super Bowl caliber team. I feel like, you know, below that is simply just making the playoffs. They've missed the playoffs the past few years. And then when you look at the floor, you know, I feel like injuries would have to happen or simply starting at the top, like Justin Herbert would get hurt. Cause I feel like if Justin Herbert gets hurt, you have Chase Daniel being the starting quarterback.
Best skill.
The journeyman.
His best skill is getting paid for not playing.
Exactly. Exactly. So that would be the worst case scenario is Justin Herbert going down with an injury. Because I think if this team suffers injuries, they can get by with what they have. And I would say that the floor would be an 8-9 9-8 season. Again, it doesn't seem that bad or it doesn't seem that low, but this team is just too talented to be, you know, 5-12 or, you know, 6-11 record. So I would say that ceiling being a Super Bowl team and then the floor being 8-9, 9-8.
Good stuff. And if you're looking at, so while I don't want to make predictions, I'm sure we've done it both on our sites and kind of gone game by game predictions, but comparing the Chargers and the Cardinals, if you guys are looking at how you see that game, do you see that game as a game that they should win, more of a toss-up game, one that would be considered a steal if they do win, or one that they don't have much of a chance? How do Chargers and Chargers fans view that game against the Cardinals?
Yeah, so with the Cardinals, not counting them out, I think the Chargers should win that game. But I will say that the Cardinals, they could squeak away with a win if a lot of the guys, the front seven gets hurt, because, you know, James Conner is a pretty solid back. And again, he can exploit that area quickly. Looking at the receivers with Hopkins, Brown, and Green. I just think that they have the Chargers have the secondary talent to be able to play really well. I know Hopkins should be back by then. And then looking at the offensive line for the Cardinals, I feel like, you know, with Bosa and Mack and just like their pass rushing talent, I think that, you know, we'll see a lot of Kyler Murray scrambling, you know, doing what he does. So I think just on that front, and then the defensive side of the ball for the Cardinals with Watt, you know, Zach Allen, Rashard Lawrence. You know, if we're talking a couple of years ago, the Chargers, you know, they were known for not having a good offensive line. Sure, you know, I'm sure that they could put Justin Herbert under duress, but I think the offensive line is in a good spot for them to completely mitigate that. And then with the secondary, with Byron Murphy, Marco Wilson, Thompson, Buda Baker, I think the Chargers have enough talent with their receiving corps to be able to, you know, put a good game against them. So, like I said, at this point in the season, the only way I could see the Cardinals, if an injury occurs to Justin Herbert, or like like a lot of injuries occur to the front seven, where James Conner could be the guy that would take over. And that's what happened a lot for the Chargers last year. Running backs love playing the Chargers. And for that reason, like when the Chargers lost to the Texans, it ended up getting Rex Burkhead an extension. So, and again, it was that bad. So that's the only way that I see the Cardinals getting away with a win. But other than that, I feel like the Chargers are a much better team on paper. And if all things go well, it should be a win for Los Angeles.
And I see the Chargers kind of a team that has, I normally don't give, I guess the Cardinals, I see it's a floor, they're going to be a 9-win team, somewhere between 9 and 13 games, the floor to ceiling. And I guess that the Chargers, for me, are kind of a 9 to 14 win team. I think their ceiling is potentially a tad higher, and while their floor is kind of the same. And that, for me, that's only because of the toughness. Just how tough that AFC West is, because when you look at tough divisions, you have to, if you want to be a playoff team, you feel like you have to win three games in the division, and if you're going to be a division winner, you got to pick up enough, so you got to sweep somebody to be able to do that. Basically, not get swept by anyone, not get swept by anyone, so that you don't lose that head-to-head tiebreaker. But I think that's a fair assessment where the Chargers come into town. For the Cardinals, that is, it's not a game you expect to win. It's a game that you want to win that isn't necessarily a steal, but you don't go into that game thinking or expecting at this point it to be in. It's more hoping that it's a win rather than expecting to win. Anyway, Gavino, really big thanks for showing up and talking on the show for a bit. That, again, that is Gavino Borges for Chargers Wire. Other than your work on Chargers Wire, I know that you do some work for our Draft Wire site. Do you have any social media anywhere else that my listeners can interact with you?
Yeah, so on Twitter, just at Gavino Borges. Again, I have an Instagram, but it's mainly just of me lifting. I'm also a powerlifter too. It's also Gavino Borges. If anyone, you know, fitness gurus or powerlifters listen to this and they want to follow me and see my lifting, yeah, that's also Gavino Borges. But I would just say those two platforms, but Twitter is going to be the main one where you can find all my football workout.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gavino, for coming on. That's Gavino Borges from ChargeWorksWild.com.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we'll come back with another opponent preview, the final of the AFC West opponents that we have, the Denver Broncos. That's coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Our next opponent preview on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast brings us to a December matchup with a team that we've seen a lot in the preseason, but rarely in the regular season. The Cardinals, as they will wrap up their AFC West schedule in December on the road against the Denver Broncos. And just when you thought that the Cardinals were not going to have to face Russell Wilson anymore after he was traded to the Seattle Seahawks, guess what? He gets traded to a team that the Cardinals will face in the last month of the year when the playoff matchups matter. against a team that will be battling for the playoffs for sure, as that's the hope. And to talk about the Denver Broncos, whom the Cardinals have not played in several years, I brought on John Heath from BroncosWire.com, the managing editor over there, the sister site to CardsWire, part of the USA Today NFL Wire. John, welcome to the show. Thanks for having me on. So John is a guy who's been in the network almost as long as I have, if not longer. When did you start with the USA Today NFL Wire?
December 2015. It was real in the early days.
So that's even before me. Even before me, I started in July of 2016. So we've been here almost the entire time, and this is the first time we've actually talked, even though there's conversations that happen in Slack and stuff like that. This is actually the first time we've actually voice-to-voice, face-to-face type of conversation, so I'm thrilled to have you on, John. How are things going in your part of the country?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I appreciate you having me on, Jess, and it's nice to talk to you. Like you said, it's kind of crazy that we've worked with each other for a while, and this is the first time we get to talk, but I'm looking forward to it. And I'm sorry, like you said, you guys thought you got rid of Facing Wilson, and now you have to do it all over again, but it's going to be a couple years after this season that would happen again. Unless you want to meet in the Super Bowl, that's fine with me. But
yeah,
sorry about that.
I'm totally meeting. I will admit that the Broncos, now granted, the Cardinals came to Arizona so I've lived here my entire life in the Phoenix area. I remember when the Cardinals came to town, but I didn't really jump in. I was always a Cardinals fan, but they were terrible. And I was a fan of the John Elway Broncos days. And then I was a big Peyton Manning fan, so I was glad to see him get his Super Bowl, his second ring there. So, but you know what the Cardinals have not done against the Broncos very well is play them. They have played each other 11 times in the regular season. The Cardinals have exactly one win, and that was the Jay Feely game when Jay Feely outscored the Broncos himself. Tim Tebow was starting for the Broncos. That's the only time the Cardinals have ever beat the Broncos. The last time was in 2018. Vance Joseph was the head coach then, came here on a Thursday night to State Farm Stadium, then University of Phoenix Stadium, and put the jack stomping on the Cardinals 41-20 or 45-10, which got Mike McCoy fired as offensive coordinator that year of that disaster of a year. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that one because that's long history. But the Cardinals will face the Broncos in December on the road, so that could be a cold one. But since we don't face the Broncos a whole lot other than the preseason, and preseason matchups are really, I mean, traditionally the Cardinals play the fourth preseason game against the Broncos, it seems, almost every year. So third, like, cut players who get cut are playing other players who get cut. So it's really, yeah. You know, I mean, Kyle Sloter is about the thing we've got in common, and it's a bummer he did not make it to the USFL championship as Birmingham took them down. But let's look back at the 2021 season. The Broncos finished 7-10, and in fourth place in their division. If you could just go back and tell us what was good and what was not so good about last season.
Yeah, I mean, last season, it really was kind of just like the whole time Vic Fangio was there. The defense was pretty, pretty solid. And I think that's Fangio's thing. Like, he's an excellent defense. Like, there were some rough games for the defense, but in general, usually, they could always count on the defense. A lot of times, the defense kept them in the game. And what held them back over and over, well, special teams also had. Special teams had plenty of miscues. But the offense. The offense just never played up to the defense. They could never score enough points. Like, you hold the Chiefs to like 24 points or something, and your own offense scores like 13. And like, sure, like 24, that's not like you're not shutting them out, but it's better than the Chiefs scoring like 40, which you know they can do in any given game. So it was kind of frustrating to fans to see this defense, this last few years, real high party defense, kind of be wasted because the offense has just been so awful. And it's really dating back to when Peyton Manning's retired, it mostly all come down to the quarterback. Like, especially last year, like, the offensive line was not bad. They have two really good running backs and Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams. They have a bunch of good, young, talented wide receivers. Like, they have weapons on offense. And I really, this year, I think the offensive line is solid. Last year, I think it was good. The years before that, it was a little shaky. But I think the O-line has taken a step forward. And really, the biggest thing was Teddy Bridgewater. Like, he could protect the ball pretty well. And he could check it down. He could, to an extent, pick up first downs. But he just didn't have the arm strength to push it down the field. So teams, they did not respect the deep ball against Teddy Bridgewater at all. So then they stacked the box. And even though the Broncos have good running backs, every now and then with a stacked box, you're going to get in third and longs. And when that happened, it was a combination of one, Bridgewater, I don't know if he didn't have confidence in his arm, and two, the play calling was just atrocious. Pat Shurmur, he'd always, like, consistently call plays that had the tight ends and the receivers run short of the sticks on third and long. Like, it would be like third and 10, and he'd have Noah Fant run a 5 yard out. And it's like, dude, what is he supposed to do when he's got, you know, a defender right on him as soon as he catches it? And then there's like a corner a couple yards upfield. Like, you expect him to break two or three tackles every time. Like, you got to throw some passes beyond the stick. So I think the play calling was bad on offense. The quarterback play, it just, like, I like Teddy Bridgewater. He's a good guy and he's competent. And like, you can win with him, but he's not the one to take you over the top. And he's not the one that's going to beat a defense over the top. And then at the end of the year, Bridgewater got really banged up, two concussions in a couple months span. So they turned it over to Drew Lock, like one last chance for him. And he just, the 3 years that he was in Denver, he was just a turnover machine. Like, he does have an arm and he's not afraid to take risks. He's kind of like a Brett Favre where he's like, either this is going to be awesome or it's going to be a disaster. He just likes to go for it. And he's just kind of too reckless. And he's too injury prone. He couldn't really get it done with him. And then this offseason, George Payton, super aggressive, goes out and gets a franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson. And I think now everybody in Denver is kind of like, okay, we got the defense. We got the pieces on offense. What we've been missing is a quarterback. And now they've got a star one. So I think everybody's pretty optimistic in Denver right now.
And they should be. It's interesting is with Cardinals team that started out really hot and then faded down the stretch. The Broncos were quite streaky. They started out 3-0. There was a lot of hope, and then they dropped 4 in a row, and then they dropped 4 out of 5, lost their final four games of the season. And at one point when they got that win over the Lions, they were 7-6 and probably felt like they were very much in the mix in the playoff race, but then dropped their final four games, 10 points, 13 points, 13 points, and then the final game of the year, 28-24, the loss to the Chiefs, which led to a couple of changes. One, they changed, and let's talk about that. So coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, MSR Cardinals Talk on the web, let's now move to the offseason moves that the Broncos made. The coaching, the quarterback, free agency, and the draft. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals Talk on the web. After losing their final four games, finishing 7-10, another year where it doesn't, they have talent and it doesn't take the offense and the quarterback don't take them over the hump. They make two moves. One, they let Vic Fangio go, hire Nathaniel Hackett. Let's talk about the coaching change. What can you tell us about Hackett as their new head coach from what you've seen, what you've heard so far in his first offseason program?
Yeah, well, for one thing, Fangio, like I said, he's a super defensive guy. Hackett played opposite in that he's a super offensive guy. And in Green Bay, he was their offensive coordinator the last 3 years. Like, obviously, it's not totally his show. But he was the offensive coordinator, and Aaron Rodgers, these last 2 years, we know how good of a year he had, back-to-back MVP seasons. And so it's not all on Hackett, but and what he used to be with the Jaguars offensive coordinator, and Blake Bortles had a career year. The Jaguars got to the AFC Championship game with Blake Bortles as their quarterback. So in my opinion, it's kind of a reflection of Hackett's resume. Like, clearly he knows what he's doing with quarterbacks. I think he worked with quarterbacks real well. And the Broncos defense, I think they are going to miss Fangio on defense, and the defense might take a step back a little bit because they're going to have first-year defensive coordinator. They brought in the Rams secondary coach, Evero, but he did coach under Fangio in the past. So the defensive scheme is going to be similar. A lot of the personnel is going to be similar. So they might take a little step back on defense, but I think the defense is going to be okay. And I think where we're going to see a huge improvement is on offense with Hackett coming in. Because Fangio was so defensive minded. There were so many decisions he made, so much clock management that was poor, where you could tell, like, defensive coordinator, and that's fine. Like, not everybody cut out to be a head coach. And, like, I don't know how Hackett's going to be with, like, clock management and stuff as well. We'll see. But I just feel like the thing that this team needed the most was to get an injection on offense, to get the offense rolling. And I think that's what Hackett brings. Not just with his resume of success that he's had with offenses, but he's super, super energetic. Like, he's a super players coach. Like, everybody loves him. He's so loud. He's a very funny guy. Like, his press conferences, he makes, like, funny little cracks. And he's just a very energetic, very entertaining guy. And he's a little young and kind of new school, whereas Fangio was an older coach and he was super old school. And he was not, an energetic joke around with players that wanted his kind of thing. And I think both styles can work. Like, we've seen, obviously, Bill Belichick, he's not like bouncing up and down on the sidelines. And, you know, the Patriots have had so much success. So it's not like Fangio's style can't work. But I do think the players really like Hackett's style. And I think that could translate to good relationships with them. And I think he's going to get the best out of them. I think some players were kind of tired of Fangio's approach, especially because if you get results, you can get away with basically anything. But if you're not getting results and you're really rubbing people the wrong way, they're going to get tired of you. So I think Fangio, I think, kind of lost the locker room a little bit. Hackett, at least in the early days, I don't think he's in danger of that at all, because it seems like everybody speaks highly of him. Everybody speaks how much they love his energy. They like how positive he is. And I think he meshes well with Wilson, because Wilson's this same way. He's such a positive guy. Like, he's never negative at all. He always spins everything into the positive. So I think they've got a real positive thing going on, and I think Hackett is kind of exactly what they needed.
That leads us to the big move, the trade for Russell Wilson, which in many ways felt inevitable. The trade from Seattle, we kind of saw it a year ahead. It was a marriage that was getting worse by the month, when Russell Wilson didn't make a trade request, but did give the four teams he'd be willing to be traded to if they were going to trade him. I don't know what you do with that. It's like going to your wife's like, I don't want a divorce, but I'll get with these four ladies if you let me. I don't know. But once the offseason came, it felt inevitable that there was going to be a trade, that the Broncos were going to make a big move at quarterback, whether it was Aaron Rodgers, that was the initial thought is, hey, they hired Nathaniel Hackett. Now they're going to go get Aaron Rodgers, which in the AFC West, they had to make a power move at quarterback, and they made their power move. Was Russell Wilson, do you think he was their first choice? Was he the guy that they had targeted more or less the entire time?
I don't know if he was their first choice, because in last year's draft, Adam Schefter reported about them having talked with the Packers, like, hey, would you trade Aaron Rodgers? And then when they get Hackett, like you said, I was like, okay, now they're definitely getting Rodgers. They got the connection. It seemed like Rodgers was disgruntled. So I really was expecting that. I thought it was a real possibility. And then very shortly after Rodgers committed to returning to Green Bay, boom, the Wilson trade went down. And it's been reported by Mike Kliss of Nine News that the timing of it was mostly coincidental, because apparently they had been talking to the Seahawks way back even at the combine. And then this trade happened just before free agency started. So I bet they were in on Rodgers, but when they realized it's going to happen, I think they turned all their attention to Wilson. So I don't think it was necessarily their first choice, but when you're talking about a guy that, you know, if not top
Aaron
five,
Rodgers,
like,
or Russell Wilson, there's really, you don't really lose with either one.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think maybe Rodgers was who they were going for first, but I don't think, like, we'll talk about a huge consolation prize. I don't think they lost any sleep about Wilson being the one they were able to get.
And so they trade that first round pick. I can't remember, how was it, five total picks? And then on top of that, Drew Lock, Shelby Harris, and Noah Fant. I mean, on the outside, yeah, they had to give up a lot, but basically the trade was they got Russell Wilson, and then the Seahawks don't have Russell Wilson. Would you say, like, that's kind of how the trade went down? When you trade a franchise quarterback, there's really no way
to, there's no way to replace it unless it happens to be the top pick in the draft where you're able to know that you're getting a quarterback to replace him. And instead of replacing Russell Wilson with another quarterback at the top of the draft, they're going with Geno Smith and Drew Lock battling it out, and they drafted a tackle, which is what Russell Wilson wanted them to do the entire time. They wanted an offensive lineman. Granted, they didn't have the draft pick to be able to draft an offensive lineman because of the Jamal Adams trade. So, I mean, how did you feel about what the Broncos gave up? Obviously, you weren't losing any sleep over Drew Lock, but what about Noah Fant and Shelby Harris? How big of a loss will either one of them be?
Yeah, like you said, once it worried all about Drew Lock, and Shelby Harris is a very underrated defensive lineman, so it is a bummer to lose him, but he is getting older. He is getting towards the end of his contract. They're not going to have him forever. And Noah Fant, the Seahawks picked up his fifth-year option shortly after they acquired him for the Broncos, so his contract was going to be coming up, and, you know, if he plays well, he's going to want to be one of the highest-paid tight ends. And, like, yeah, it's nice to have a real good defensive lineman. It's nice to have, I don't know, top 10, top 12 tight end, wherever Fant falls in there. Like, it's nice to have them. But I would trade them any day of the week for Russell Wilson, because you can plug in a tight end. You can plug in defensive lineman. You can't plug in a Russell Wilson. Like, unless you have a franchise quarterback, Broncos fans have seen it the last 6 years. Like, you have a good defense. You have good weapons on offense. It doesn't matter if your quarterback's not good enough. And now the Broncos got that quarterback. So they're always going to have a chance. And, like, they just drafted a tight end, and they have Albert O still from last year, who they really like. They drafted a couple of defensive linemen in the draft. They signed a defensive lineman in free agency. So I think they're going to be okay. They're going to be able to replace those holes. And even if those players don't immediately step up to the standard of what those guys played last year, Wilson's more going to then make up for it, because he changes everything for the offense. Like, the Broncos went from missing the playoffs 6 years in a row to now they have the 7th best Super Bowl odds. And that doesn't guarantee anything. Like, it doesn't guarantee they're getting to the Super Bowl, but they're contenders again, and they're considered contenders again because they got a quarterback. So, yeah, like, it's a bummer to lose a Shelby Harris. It's a bummer to lose a Noah Fant, but I would do it any day of the week for Wilson.
And on top of that, one thing that Broncos fans know, when you've got a quarterback, you're good. I mean, they saw it. They had the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl appearance, the Super Bowl wins with John Elway. And then the nothing for a while. I mean, Jake Plummer, they got some production out of for a couple of years. Then the nothing till Peyton Manning. Then Peyton Manning retires on his barely being able to throw the ball. And then nothing, nothing, nothing. And now they got Russell Wilson. So the Broncos know all about what it is to have a quarterback and to not have a quarterback. So moving on to the rest of free agency. Who were their key losses in free agency, and what were the moves that they made that will have the biggest impact on the upcoming season?
Yeah, one of the key guys I thought that they lost was Bryce Callahan. He's their slot cornerback, and the thing that's been his issue the last few years is he keeps getting hurt. Every year he hasn't played a single or a full 16 or 17 game season, I don't think, once in his career. So he's always been plagued by injuries, but when he's healthy, he's been a phenomenal slot corner. So that's someone that they could miss on defense, but they did sign Quan Williams, who was a free agent from the 49ers, who's also a slot corner and someone that they like. And I think he can play at a high level, but he's been banged up a few times. So it's kind of like you're replacing one injury guy with a slightly older guy who's also had some injuries. So that, I'm not totally sure about that, especially because Bryce Callahan, he went to the Chargers, a division rival, and they paid him the veteran minimum. So I'm like, what? Like, are you so bothered by the games that he missed that you can't even pay him the veteran minimum? Because they gave Kayvon Williams, who's older than Callahan, a little more than the veteran minimum. So that was a little curious to me. But they also signed another free agent from the 49ers, DJ Jones, who's a defensive lineman, and he might help replace Shelby Harris a little bit, but it remains to be seen if he's going to be more of an end or more of a nose tackle. And Harris, Vic Fangio wanted to play nose tackle, but he hated it, and they put him out defensive end where he wanted to be, and he was way better there. So Harris was more of an end. Jones might be more of a nose, but the way they play on the defensive line, guys are going to move around and stuff, so it'll be a little interchangeable. So he will definitely help make up for the loss of Harris. And I think Jones on the defensive line, he might be their biggest free agent addition this year. They got Randy Gregory, who's a pass rusher, and obviously pass rushing is huge, but they kind of have some pass rushers in place where if Randy Gregory is not available every week because of injury or whatever, they have some guys that I'm like, okay, they have some good depth at pass rusher. But on the inside of the defensive line, the interior defensive line, they could not stop the run last year. They just teams, especially late in games, if they establish a lead, the Broncos are just so bad at stopping the run. And part of it, inside linebacker, they had a ton of injuries there. But part of it also was the defensive line just letting the linemen get through and then get to the second level to the linebackers, and teams just ran down their throat. And DJ Jones, he can do a little bit of interior rushing, like he's not incapable of it, but what he's known for is stuffing the run. So I think their run defense is going to get a huge boost from DJ Jones. So Gregory, everybody loves sacks and they love pass rushers. So he's the big name guy. He's the flashy name. But I think DJ Jones might have the biggest impact, even if fans may not even notice it. But I don't think teams are going to be able to run down the Broncos' throat like they were last year. And I think mainly that's because of the DJ Jones addition.
Well, and from my perspective as well, that it's really hard to defend the run, no matter how good you are defending the run, if you have to defend it an entire game. Because,
yeah,
and one reason why teams, why it matters when you can't stop the run, it's because you're losing. And when you have a bad offense, teams are going to be able to run the ball because they'll be ahead and they'll that's because like the Cardinals last year, their run defense became bad late in the year. Their best run defense was their offense. Early in the season, yeah, they get an early stop, so they would stop the run early. They get a stop, they get a score, they get a lead, and guess what? No one's going to try to run any anymore. And so, while you got to beef up in the middle, I think it becomes just as important, if not more, in today's NFL, to be able to put an offense on the field that can get you a lead. And so, that was in from Vance Joseph defensively. That's kind of his thing. He doesn't think you need to be great at stopping the run because that doesn't stop points. Stopping the pass stops points, but you have to do things on first and second down to get to the passing game to force the pass on third down. And you're probably familiar with that philosophy. But we move on to the draft. And now, 6 years for Randy Gregory. Did you like that deal?
I was a little surprised by it because of all the suspensions he's had, and he's had a couple of injuries. I was surprised. But then once I learned, like, because I don't follow the Cowboys very closely, I didn't know all the ins and outs of what was going on with him. I just assumed it was like substance abuse suspensions. And under the language of the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, it was. But apparently it was all marijuana related. And now the NFL doesn't have near the stance on marijuana that they did then. The NFL doesn't really care about anymore. And in addition to that, Gregory has stopped doing it. He said he stopped doing it. So they're not going to be testing him for it like they used to. And if they do, they wouldn't be cracking down on it like they used to. And he says he's not doing it anymore. So I don't think the suspensions, I don't think it's going to be really a problem. And as far as like the production, when he's been on the field, he's been really good at generating pressure. And some Broncos fans and some like AFC West rivals have been like, well, he hasn't had enough sacks. Like, he has like 16 sacks in like 6 years or something like that. But people got to account for, he missed like basically 3 full seasons. So it's not that he just, was only getting that, 16 divided by six or whatever breaks down to. And rushing the passer is also more than sacks. Like, of course, it would be great if he gets more than that in Denver. That's obviously, that would be ideal. But if you're getting pressure on the quarterback, like he had 52 quarterback hits, and that's huge. And last year, I think he had like four forced turnovers, either from a strip sack or an interception or forcing an interception with a quarterback hit. So something like that, that's just as big of a sack or even bigger than a sack. So I think he's a guy that can generate pressure. I don't think he's going to be facing suspensions anymore. And he has had a couple injury things. So that's one thing that they got to hope not an issue. Even right now, this offseason, he had a shoulder scope. So he's got to get his shoulder healthy. He's got to get his body up and running. But if he does, if he's healthy, I don't think he's really going to have off the field issues. And I think he's going to be a productive passer. And what's nice is, like I said, they have multiple rushers. He can kind of be part of the wave of rushers. It's not like they have to count on him to be the only guy to generate pressure, the only guy to get sacks for him. He doesn't have to do that. So I think that might help with the pressure a little bit. So initially I was surprised by the DM, but now that we're a little removed from it, I'm not bothered by it at all. And I don't think it's going to be an issue, but we'll see how it goes.
Moving on to the draft, obviously your first round pick was Russell Wilson. That's not really how it goes, but that's what you did with it. And we Cardinals fans know how that goes. We got used our first round pick to get Marquise Brown. We've used our second round pick in years past to get DeAndre Hopkins and Chandler Jones. You're pleased with that. I like the first two picks that the Broncos made. In fact, the second round pick that the Broncos made, Oklahoma pass rusher Nick Nito, he was a guy I wanted the Cardinals to take at 55. They ended up going with Trey McBride. Talented pass rusher, athletic, long, has a chance to be something in the league. And then you add the tight end, Greg Dulcich out of UCLA, a guy that was more of a pass catcher, was a productive pass catcher, and I know some of the pre-draft stuff, they're high on him and what he can do. But tell us about the rest of the draft class. There are a bunch of guys I did not really hear about. You got in round four, cornerback Damari Mathis out of Pitt, Iowa State, defensive line Ayoma Uwazurike. Oh, wow. Round four, good luck with that. You've got Oklahoma and safety, Delarin Turner-Yell, Montrell Washington out of Samford, a receiver, Luke Wattenberg, a center out of Washington, defensive lineman Matt Henningsen out of Wisconsin, Fayon Hicks, another was hit, a cornerback. And so, I would you expect that Benito and Dulcich are the two that are going to be expected to contribute? And are there other players in that draft class who could have an impact in 2022?
Yeah, I think obviously because they're second and third round picks, they're obviously going to have the biggest opportunity on offense and defense to have the biggest contributions from the rookie class right out the gate. Like everybody would expect that. And I think with Dulcich, he's not going to be expected to be the number one tight end because, like you said, he's a receiving tight end. So when they have two tight end sets, if he's not beating out Albert O for the receiving option, he's probably not going to be on the field for his blocking. So just because he's a real good receiver, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to jump up to the top of the depth chart, maybe not even jump up to number two right away. So he might take a little bit of time to work into it. And I think that's perfectly normal for a rookie tight end. A lot of times it takes them a little bit to gel, a little bit to get into things. So I think Broncos fans should kind of temper their expectations. And Bonito, I think it's really, really nice. Like I keep saying, they have depth at pass rusher. You know, they have Bradley Chubb. They just signed Randy Gregory. They moved Baron Browning. He was an inside linebacker last year out of necessity because they had so many injuries, but he played outside at Ohio State. He was a rookie last year. They really like him, and they love the way he rushes off the edge. And then they got Malik Reed, who's a really productive rotational rusher. Last year, they drafted Jonathan Cooper, and he ended up playing a decent amount last year because of injuries, and he was a perfectly fine rotational rusher. And then they even signed Christopher Allen from Alabama, an undrafted guy. He's also a candidate to be a rotational rusher. So they have all kinds of pass rushers. So it's nice for Bonito. He doesn't have to start day one. He doesn't have pressure day one. He's just going to be in the pass rush rotation. And I think that's really nice for him because it's not like he's going to be leaned on. He doesn't have to be out there in the early down setting the run against, like, they're going to want him to work on that. He's going to have to get better on that. And over time, I think he will. But I think really, as a rookie, he's probably going to get to a lot of fun stuff. He's going to be rotating in pass rushing situations, which, you know, as a young pass rusher, you love that. Any pass rusher loves that. You know, that's what you live for. That's what you're paid for. So I think he could have a nice little season, pile up some sacks because he's going to get in on the field in opportune times. But at the same time, it's not like he's going to get some snaps out by linebacker. So don't expect him to necessarily be like a defensive player of the year candidate. And really, Bonito, he's the rookie that you could see, you know, contributing on defense right away. And Dulcich, he's the rookie that contributed on offense right away, even if it's not a huge role. But really, the guy that I think could have the biggest impact this year for them is Montrell Washington as the receiver. And I don't really think he's going to have a huge contribution on offense because there's plenty of receivers. But they need a kick returner. And he was a phenomenal kick returner in college. The Broncos, they did not sign or re-sign Deontay Spencer in free agency. He's been their returner the last few years. And last year, he really was not good enough. So they knew they needed to upgrade that position. And really, they have two other in-house guys that can do it. but I don't think they want to count on either of them. I think they drafted Washington basically for him to be the guy at returner. And they're going to say it's competition. They're going to make him, you know, compete in training camp, preseason stuff. But as long as he doesn't, you know, fumble the ball literally and figuratively, I think the return job's his. And if he returns like in the pros as he did in college, I think he's going to be an exciting returner, an electric returner. And really, the last few years, in addition to the offense, the special teams has not been good enough. And part of it is their return game has just not been explosive. And I think Washington could really give them a boost. I'm making big plays. You know, it's not like you have to take it to the end zone every time. But, you know, if you crank off like a 20-yard punt return instead of an 8-yard punt return, you know, if you have like a 30-yard kickoff return instead of a 20-yard kickoff return, like all that adds up. The field position is huge. So I think I have a feeling he's going to win the return job, and being the returner from day one, I think of the draft class, he could have the biggest impact this year.
Coming next with the Rise Up Searhead podcast, the best Eric Carlton's talk on the web, let's move on and talk about the expectations and hopes for the 2022 season for the Broncos. That's coming next on Rise Up Searhead. We're back on the Rise Up Searhead podcast, Bastara Cardinals Talk on the Web, still with John Heath from BroncosWire.com, the managing editor over that side, the sister side of CardsWire, part of the USA Today NFL Wire. And now we look ahead to the 2022 season. I think it's fair to say that the AFC West is arguably, before the season, the best team, the best division in football, with all four teams vying for at least the playoffs, and probably all four of them with a decent shot at winning the division. Obviously, the Chiefs will enter as the favorites because they just keep winning year after year after year after year. But what, with Russell Wilson in the fold now, new head coach, what are reasonable expectations for this team? And then two, what do you think their floor and ceiling is for what will happen in 2022?
Yeah, I think if you ask them, reasonable expectations is to win the AFC West, because they keep talking about that. And they even have T-shirts that they wear at the facility that says win the West. And that's what they say. And you want them to say that and to have that mindset and mentality. And I think they believe it. But I don't know if that's reasonable from, you know, from a fan perspective, from the perspective of someone that covers the team. I don't think, like, from our perspective, that should be the expectation. Like, the players and the coaches, yeah, you want them to have that mindset. But I don't think fans should be banking on that. I think it's just so tough. Like you said, the Chiefs, they've been winning the division for years. You can't ever count them out. The Chargers, like, they've been underperforming, it seems like, for years. Like, even back when they had Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees.
They always fall just short of what you think they could do.
Exactly. They never quite live up to the expectation that people put on them. But at some point, you feel like that's got to turn around. And I feel like with Justin Herbert, he is such a good young, promising quarterback. I feel like he's going to get them turned around. So really, I could see the Chargers making a push. And then Raiders, you know, Derek Carr, if he played in a different division, I really think he would get more love. I think he's kind of overshadowed by Mahomes and definitely now by Justin Herbert. And then you throw in Russell Wilson as well. But, you know, they got Devontae Adams, who's arguably, if not the top receiver, at least one of the top receivers in the NFL. And, you know, they got some pieces on defense. They got some good pass rushers. So, really, like you're saying, it's a tough division. I could see any of those teams winning. I kind of doubt the Raiders would win. But, you know, if everybody beats up on each other, you can't rule it out. I could see the Chargers winning. I could see the Chiefs winning. I could see the Broncos winning. So, really, I think the floor is fourth place in the division. But I don't think, because I'm not predicting the Broncos to have a bad season. I just think the division could beat up on each other so much. And who knows, third place, maybe even fourth place might be enough to compete for a wild card spot in the conference. I think it's just going to come down to how they split the games against each other. It's going to be such a dogfight. So the floor, I think, is last in the division. And fans will hate to hear that. Like, what, we got a star quarterback and now we might finish last in the division? But you just can't rule out that possibility with how tough the division is. But that's not necessarily what I'm predicting. Like, I'm not predicting them to win the division. Also not predicting second. I feel like they're going to be right in contention for second place. Like, if the Chiefs, if they do it again, or if the Chargers overtake them, I think the Broncos are going to be right there for second place, and I think they're going to be in position for a wild card spot. The conference is tough. It's not like it's going to be easy to get in the playoffs in the AFC, but I think they're going to be able to get into a wild card spot. And then, you know, once you get in the playoffs, anything could happen. Like, if the defense is playing well, if they're being able to run the ball, if, you know, if Russell Wilson just takes the offense to a different level, like once you get to the dance, anything could happen. So, you know, I think they will get to the playoffs and then, you know, we'll just see what happens from there. But I also like, you can't guarantee anything in the AFC West. It's going to be a crazy season for the whole division.
Absolutely. Personally, I have the like a worst case scenario. I see them being a 9-8 team, maybe just missing the playoffs. That's worst case. And that's if Russell Wilson maybe takes a step back, if it takes a little time offensively to get going with the first year head coach. But I think they're probably a 9-13 win team. I think they will be a playoff team. I think the West will end up with two wild cards. I think if they play outside of the division, what I expect them to do in the AFC, I think we'll see the Chiefs, Broncos, and Chargers all in the playoffs this coming season, and then a wild card coming from one of the other teams. But as you look ahead to December, so now it's not a prediction, but as an analyst, as a fan of the team, how do you view that Cardinals game, that home game in December? Is it a game that you think the Broncos should expect, that fans should expect them to win? That would be a should win, but tough toss up, or you would consider it stealing a win if they came away with that?
Yeah, I don't think I speak for all Broncos fans, because I think Broncos fans are a little arrogant and a little narrow-minded as far as viewing the rest of the league. I think if you talk to the average Broncos fan, I think they would say they expect them to win that game. And I think some people are discrediting the Cardinals because they had a little bit of a down year last year. And I think I think people aren't taking them seriously, but I'm definitely taking them seriously. You always have to take Kyler Murray seriously, because I think he's kind of like, they're not the same quarterback. I don't want to try to say they are, but I think they kind of have a similar deal where when things break down and they get out of it, like, that's your worst nightmare as a defense, because they extend plays to keep things alive, and they can either run downfield while the defense has got their backs to them and pick up, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards with their legs, or they can run around and no secondary can cover for that long that they can keep plays alive, and then they connect with the receiver deep down the field. Like, to me, that is one of the most annoying things to defend against the defense. And I think that's something Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, they both have that in their tool bag. So to me, you have to take Kyler Murray seriously. Like, he can really hurt you extending plays and keeping plays alive. And then we've seen their run game last year. They have a real solid run game. And I think, like you're saying, with the defense they have, you know, they have pieces and they kind of went in spurts. But I think they can have a pretty good defense. So to me, I think it's kind of a toss-up. I might lean towards giving Denver the edge primarily because it's at home, but I'm not taking the Cardinals lightly. Like, I think it would be a good win if they beat the Cardinals at home, but I would lean more toss-up more than expectation of I expect them to win this.
Yeah, I would view that. I kind of look at that game. I think I can't remember if I predicted a Cardinals or Broncos win for the game-by-game predictions, but I would view that for the Cardinals side as a game that will be a toss-up, or it's somewhere between a toss-up that they could steal or a toss-up they should win, if you're talking about. But I think it's more for the Cardinals being on the road that it's a toss-up game that would be a steal of a win if they were to pull it off. This is John Heath again from BroncosWire.USAToday.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Broncos, the managing editor over there, sister site to Cardinals Wire. John, I thank you for your time. Aside from the site, which obviously we should all know how to get to, is there a way for our listeners to connect with you on social media or otherwise?
Yeah, you can check me out on Twitter. It's by John Heath, BYJONHEATH. And if you want to check out what's going on with the Broncos, especially, you know, once we actually get into the season, the game's coming up, you can check out at the Broncos Wire on Twitter and see what's going on with them.
John, thanks for coming on the show. And this will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, episode 361. This wraps up our AFC West preview, part two. We will be back later in the week with the first of our two NFC South opponent previews. So that wraps up this edition of the show. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll be back in a few days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red.